Part 3, Chapter 9, Core Values and a Noble Cause. When we spoke with Gordon Binder, the former CEO of Amgen, he asked the same question almost every other Stage 4 tribal leader asked. Why do you want to talk with me? He added, I didn't do anything. We asked him for a few hours of time to tell us the Amgen story from his perspective so other leaders could learn from it. That was enough to convince him to talk with us to chronicle the story of how Amgen owned Stage 4, a story we had seen from the inside as consultants to this historic company in the early and mid-1990s. Early in Binder's tenure, many people realized that the Amgen culture, as he told us, was really good, far better than other companies. He added, people said, it makes my life more fun, and it's effective. It's good for me, good for the company, good for everyone. Most, though, expected its specialness to end as its size kept doubling. He continued, people would sit around trying to figure out if it would change as the company grew. When we passed 50 or 100 or 1,000 employees, they worried that we would lose our special culture. It was a frequent topic of discussion. Our memory of the early Amgen culture was high energy, dedication to the cause of curing disease, and focus on collective success. We overheard custodians, right along with research scientists and marketing staff, saying that their work was helping to cure cancer. Their words rang of genuine passion for their affiliation with Amgen, to a degree that is hard to convey to people who weren't there. During this time, a middle manager decided, without any formal authority, to record the Amgen culture. Binder recalls, we hadn't thought about the difference between values, principles, and so on. He wanted to write down what Amgen's values were. He started talking with a lot of people to see if he could figure it out. When I found out about this project, I decided that it was too great to let him do it alone. We should get the whole company involved and really do this right. Binder continues, by the time we were done, we had individual interviews with about 400 people, focus groups, and so on. It literally turned out that there were 8 core values, absolutely not 7 or 9. Along the way, I concluded everything grew out of the values. The culture was based on them. If we could start with the values, everything else would follow. Identifying values. A key point for companies that want to attain Stage 4 is to go for values now. One of the most common misconceptions we heard in our research is that values is a topic for organizations that have a lot of money, and that struggling organizations should instead focus on the day-to-day tactics of survival. Almost without exception, we found that wildly successful organizations talked about values when it appeared they could least afford to do so. IDEO, Amgen, and C.B. Richard Ellis's private client group all started with a common set of values, either by luck or by design. Amgen was fortunate enough to have started as a culture dominated by scientists, eager to collaborate, and so their culture reflected science-based inquiry, competition, teamwork, creating value, ensuring quality, collaboration, and communication, and being ethical, the 8 values that continue to lead the company. Binder and the team wanted to keep the resulting document short, but they knew that every word would be important. He recalls, when we got down to the almost final draft, someone had the bright idea of getting the top management team in a room and having a whiz at the keyboard sit there and put the first value on the screen. Everyone made suggestions, and we rewrote it in real time on the screen. We spent hours on this thing, and every word was worthy of discussion and consideration. We ended up publishing it. 10 years later, there were some minor changes, 100% of which were for the purpose of clarity. These were the values, still are the values. The effort to clarify Amgen's values in Binder's words was the most important thing we ever did. managers were expected to hire on the basis of values, promote people who lived them, and fire people who acted out of line with them. Binder recalls one day when he learned that a manager he hired and interviewed had been fired by the head of human resources. Binder told us, "I was annoyed that he had taken this action without talking to me first, until the head of HR said, 'He lied on his resume. That's against our values.'" Binder laughed as he told us the story. What could I say? He was right. Getting Binder to talk values isn't hard, and when on the subject, he's as passionate as any tribal leader we've met. He said, "I remember many meetings when we just couldn't decide what to do, and then someone would ask, 'What do the values say?'" Binder told us that most meetings ended within minutes, everyone happy with the decision that now seemed obvious. In his view, the most important part of his schedule as CEO was the monthly evening meeting with all new Amgen employees. He would spend a few minutes on the history of the company and then, as he told us, get right to the values. He would talk through each one, saying what the company felt it meant and how it applied. I would say to them, "If these aren't your values, you should leave. It doesn't mean you're a bad person, but it does mean you're the wrong person for Amgen." Although he laughs when we bring it up, Binder is considered one of the most successful CEOs of the 20th century, in part because of the culture he helped build. One of the industry's favorite stories expresses the Amgen value of compete intensely and win. In 1989, 15 members of the staff lived and worked in a motel for over 90 days, working day and night on the U.S. Food and Drug Administration application for Epogen, which allowed the company to file its application in what may still be considered record time. Perhaps most remarkable, he and the managers largely made up this focus on values. The only model they drew on was a decades-old initiative at Hewlett-Packard, which they learned about only after a draft of the Amgen values had been completed. We referred to several other famous examples from recent years, most of which he dismissed. "We looked into those," he said. "Mostly they're written by the PR department or by consultants. This approach to values is only real if the whole company does it and if the leaders take the most active role." We would add, it is by taking an active role that the leaders are recognized by the tribe as leaders. Even considering that Amgen entered biotechnology at almost the perfect time, the company's success is nearly unprecedented. One share purchased at the 1983 IPO price of just under $17 would be worth, after splits are considered, $2,784 in the year 2000, the year Binder stepped down. In 1994, Amgen was awarded the National Medal of Technology, which represents the highest presidential award for the use of technology. At that time, only two other industrial organizations, Bell Labs and DuPont, had received the award. Mention of Binder's name in the company he headed for 12 years elicits smiles and looks of respect. Truly, Binder's focus on values helped make him one of biotechnology's greatest tribal leaders. The foundation of Stage 4. The purpose of this chapter is to examine the two most important aspects of owning Stage 4: identifying and leveraging core values, and aligning on a noble cause. Everything else the tribe does should be sandwiched in between these two constructs: projects, activities, initiatives, and processes. Unless they are fueled by values and reach toward the tribal vision, should either be rethought until they are consistent with these guiding principles or pruned. By definition, core values and a noble cause can never be checked off in the same way that companies complete an upgrade to computer technology. A value such as integrity or innovation is timeless, and a noble cause is so far-reaching that even with all the technical breakthroughs Amgen had, it will never be fulfilled. We found stable Stage 4 tribes in all sorts of places, architecture, engineering, high technology, government, and education. In every case, We're Great Cultures rested on core values and reached toward a noble cause. The importance of shared values. Even if tribal leaders do nothing more than recognize people for their values, the effect is intense. Kathleen Calcidisi, the former COO of Apple Retail, described one of her most moving days at the company. She said, "I asked people in my team to write down what they really like and admire about someone else in the group. We asked about their values. I had them written on parchment with calligraphy, and then I gave it out to the team members. A guy had tears in his eyes because he had never been appreciated like that before." Calcidisi adds, "There was mutual respect within the team. Everyone was part of the team." Finding values that cut across a group of people can take an entire tribe to this zone of appreciation and emotion and lead to a level of performance that from the outside can seem miraculous. Mike Arruzioni, captain of the U.S. Olympic hockey team that won the gold in 1980, said it all came down to shared values. Taking exception to the press about his team's history-making performance, Arruzioni added, "When we won in 1980, it wasn't a miracle. We won because of a strong commitment and work ethic, not just for one game, two games, three games, but for 6 months. And for when we started to play as young kids, there were thousands of people they could have put on that Olympic team, but there were only 20, and there had to be a reason for that." The reason, to him, was talent built on a foundation of, in his words, making a commitment and pride. He added, it all tied back to old-fashioned values. His statement made us think of the U.S. basketball dream team in Sydney in 2000, composed of superstars, most of them stage three overachievers. No team formed, and they were defeated by lesser players who gelled to stage four. Most tribal leaders in our study knew the importance of hiring for values, but few could articulate it as well as Binder, who drew on his time in the military for insights. He said, "Get a group of military special forces people, separate them, ask each one the same questions, and you'll get roughly the same answers from each. Values uniformity goes a long way to building effective teams. Bullets are flying. They don't have time to debate. They have to react in similar ways." Bullets were flying during much of Binder's tenure at Amgen, and as they did, employees came together. His watch as CEO from 1988 to 2000 saw Congress seriously consider reducing the exclusivity period granted to companies that develop drugs for medical problems affecting fewer than 200,000 people. A collection of non-U.S., non-innovative companies led the effort with the help from U.S. biotechnology licensors. This effort, ironically, was a reaction to how successfully Amgen had defended its rights to Epogen, one of its signature drugs. Despite a large percentage of its revenue spent on research and development, up to 29% in some years, it was not easy to turn science into new products. The size of the workforce increased dramatically, as Amgen employees predicted in the mid-1980s, which strained the company's systems. However, by making as many decisions as possible stem from their eight values, Amgen was able to maintain its standards and focus and retain its stage four culture of tribal pride. Identifying values. Once people hear how stage four companies are built on shared values, they almost always have the same question. How can I identify the values of team members and potential employees? Dilbert creator Scott Adams pointed out that this approach is very hard. He told us, "People aren't stupid. If I were going for a job, I'd say what I think the person wants to hear. And if that's corporate values, that's what I'd talk about." He's right on both counts. People aren't stupid, and they often try to say the right thing. We put this question to Binder, who said, "It's amazing how many people, even accomplished scientists and business executives, didn't know our values at all." He added, "Even when they'd read about them, they didn't feel them, and a good interviewer can sniff that out." Interestingly, "sniff out" is the same expression USC President Steve Sample used to describe how to spot stage 3 behavior among university administrators whose jobs require stage 4 behavior. We put the same concern to David Kelly of IDEO. He went back to the policy of the company to have 10 employees lunch a candidate. He said, "You might fool one or two, but you're not going to pull the wool over the eyes of 10. Both Binder and Kelly added that for this tribal hiring approach to work, people have to know what the values and culture are and what they mean. As Binder says, it's not enough to just know the words. You have to know what they mean. Some people try to use the right words, but if it's not in their heart, that's clear. We'll offer two ways to detect values, both of which we've learned from people in our studies. The first, longest but most effective, is to tell a story about how you learned one of your core values. One of our clients is the Sierra Health Foundation, which runs a leadership development program for leaders in the nonprofit sector, now in its 7th year. Once we noticed that tribal leaders tend to tell value-laden stories, we worked with the Sierra Health Foundation staff to begin this 9-month journey by us telling one of ours and asking if our tale sparks any stories from the listeners. Although the program always starts as a room full of strangers, a few hours later, almost every person has told his or her story, and now people know one another as their core values. Often, this part of the session stretches into the evening. Most remarkable is that 9 months later, most people remember one another's stories, often in vivid detail. The second way to get at someone's values is to ask a simple question and follow it up with 3 to 5 open-ended questions. A good question is, "What are you proud of?" The person will usually start with a resume-style accomplishment, a job, a degree, or making a tough sale. After a few open-ended questions, you'll find the reason that accomplishment gives the person pride is that it helped people, supported the family, or made a difference for someone. In short, you'll find that the pride ties actions to values, and you'll learn what those values are. We worked with a group of surgeons who claimed that they didn't have values and weren't proud of anything, a sign of the powerless detachment of stage 2. After many failed attempts to reach their values, we finally asked, "What ticks you off?" These accomplished surgeons mostly responded, "Managed healthcare," or "hospital bureaucrats." When we asked why these factors angered them, we heard, "Because I'm the doctor." When we asked why that's so important, we heard their values. "Because I'm in this business to save lives. So why is someone who doesn't know anything about medicine making life and death decisions?" Depending on the person, the value is health, vitality, or making a difference. The doctors went from passive to passionate as their answer shifted from chatter about the industry to their core values. Our definition of a core value is a principle without which life wouldn't be worth living. When people talk about those kinds of values, they become excited and vibrant. Even scientific organizations, which often claim to be dispassionate and value-free, share core values. Enriching human knowledge and advancing science are as much values as integrity and accuracy, which are hallmarks of good scholarship. We asked comedian Carol Burnett what she is most proud of, and after a few open-ended questions, she said, "The deal is that we are big kids in bigger bodies, here to play, entertain, and feed ourselves with the joy of what happens when we get out of our own way. Because we, the people who worked on the Carol Burnett show, were a family, there was very little fear of making a joke, but we didn't allow cutting humor. In one sentence, Burnett conveyed her guiding principles and how she used them as a tribal leader. Tribal leaders keep digging until they find values that, like Burnett's, can turn a group of professionals into a family. Frank Jordan, the former mayor of San Francisco, recalled his early days as a police officer in the city. He said, "I would only do something for a few years, and then I was done with it." He added, "After becoming a sergeant, I started doing community participation and crime prevention." How do you get interaction with the community and have everyone understand we're not foes? We organized neighborhood block clubs where people would gather. A representative from the police would speak, and at some time during the two-hour meeting, the officers on patrol in that area would stop by and explain what they had seen and how they would respond to a call. It was great for community relations, and by the time we were done, we had 3,000 neighborhood block clubs in San Francisco. When one listens for Jordan's values, they are obvious: communication, collaboration, partnership, making a difference, and learning. Jordan introduced officers with the same values to the community, going a long way to foster a "we're great" vibe in the city. It's no wonder that he went on to become chief of police and then mayor. Most companies hire for skills, not for values, and so may find themselves without Amgen's values homogeneity. The key in this situation is to dig deeper and find values that unite people. For example, we watched one tribal leader in financial services whose department was cobbled together out of two mergers and an acquisition. Some people valued innovation, others collaboration, and some independence. He asked why people valued each of these, and in each case, they came up with the same value: accomplishment. People in this group took different paths: innovation, building teams, or working alone, to accomplish something they all felt was important. Often, the sense we get just before finding shared values is a sense of resonance, that your values and mine are not overlapping, but darn close. Our advice is keep digging. Turning values into a tribe. Once tribal leaders recognize shared values, they begin talking about them with people in the tribe, just as the middle manager at Amgen did. From our studies, others will agree or disagree, add viewpoints, or try to say that you got it wrong. But in any case, the topic of conversation is now the group itself. It is at this moment, when a leader begins talking about everyone's values, as opposed to individuals discussing my values, that tribal magic happens. It reminds us of alchemy, when people search for a way to turn lead into gold. In a sense, the moment when tribal leaders can speak to the members of the tribe about the tribe itself, a group of individuals gels, a common identity forms, and people dedicate themselves to the success of the group. This is what we call tribal alchemy, the first vision of stage 3 melting into stage 4. Note that behavior and culture reinforce each other. We asked Patrick Charmel, CEO of Griffin Hospital, about his best day in the company. He said, "It's not a single day, but rather something that happens every single day. You see people doing something extraordinary that they wouldn't have done when they started working here. You see it in the valets, the housekeepers, physicians, nurses, everyone. My mother was a patient here recently, and she noticed it right away. We don't just talk about our values here, we live them." The test of whether a tribe is values-based is not just its members' talk, but in the alignment between their talk and the practices of the culture. From our studies, this moment happens in many different ways. We saw Glenn Esnard of C.B. Richard Ellis's private client group show a new business model on PowerPoint slides, causing a pocket of "we're great" to form out of a sea of stage 3. We saw it happen in an aerospace company when an executive passed around photographs of an airline napkin he used to write down the values he heard from colleagues in another city during a business trip. We've even seen people get excited by emails that pinpoint tribal values, with people quickly forwarding the message to others. In all cases, it was the tribe's reaction that made the moment one of alchemy. People recognized themselves in the message and said, "This is it." In most cases, they also recognized the person who brought the message to them as a tribal leader. In most instances, the person the tribe recognized as a leader had been working on the group's culture for months, if not years, using the principles we outlined earlier in this audiobook. As they put these techniques into place, they upgraded the culture, making it ready for the emergence of the tribal leader. Finding expressions of core values. Working with the tribe, tribal leaders construct strategies to achieve important outcomes. Even before they get to this step, though, tribal leaders guide the group's discussion to ways of making their values tangible. One of the strongest examples was Frank Jordan, who, when we met with him, was special assistant to the president of the Betty and Gordon Moore Foundation. The foundation is dedicated to funding projects that make life better several generations out, and it rests on the core values of communication, environmental responsibility, vibrancy, and innovation. At age 71, Jordan was the epitome of health, looking as if he does 150 push-ups before going to bed. The conference room where we met had an Asian tech look. The space was warm and comfortable, inviting dialogue. The round conference table was surrounded by a 2-foot-tall recycled brick wall, above which was glass. A work area was visible from the conference room, and vice versa. Everything about meeting with the special assistant to the president screamed the foundation's values: bricks, the environment, the round table, innovation, the open space and visibility, communication, vibrancy, the fitness of Jordan. Brian France, chairman and CEO of NASCAR, found a simple way to implement the company's value of teamwork. He told us, "We gave everyone a business card, from the janitor to the CEO. The custodians felt so good when they got a card. It made everyone part of the company, something to be proud of." George Zimmer, CEO of Men's Warehouse, built his company on a love of innovation, collaboration, and learning. Of the company's 13,000 employees, only a few hundred have graduated from a 4-year college, and the bulk of people who work in the stores have only a high school education. He told us, "Retail is the factory job of one or two generations ago. We had to do something. Something, in line with his and the company's values, is to make higher education available for as many people as possible." Zimmer set up and funded, out of his own pocket, the Zimmer Family Foundation, which gives $5,000 scholarships, renewable for up to 4 years, to children of employees. Last year, the foundation gave away $650,000, more than Zimmer was paid. The moment of truth, when living values isn't easy. In 2001, an elderly woman was admitted to Griffin Hospital, having trouble breathing. She lived alone with little social contact. Despite her relative isolation from infectious diseases, doctors thought it might be anthrax, and the early tests confirmed it. Griffin alerted the authorities and arranged a staff meeting for 3 p.m. to let the employees know of the development. Just a few hours before that time, the FBI ordered absolute secrecy until the final tests were in. Several administrators, including Bill Pawanda and Patrick Charmel, talked with high-ranking officials in the FBI, including an assistant director, and the FBI's order was firm and final. The staff must not be told. Minutes before the scheduled meeting, Pawanda phoned Connecticut Governor John Rowland, whom he knew from his days in politics. Rowland said, "I'll support you no matter what you do." At 3 p.m., Charmel and other leaders spoke to the 350 employees and explained that the early tests indicated anthrax. Immediately after the meeting, Pawanda phoned Governor Rowland and suggested he make a public announcement so the news wouldn't trickle out from employees. Within minutes, the governor announced what the staff already knew, and an hour later, the press began arriving at Griffin. First local TV and radio stations in Connecticut, then those from New York. Within a day, there were 19 satellite trucks, 9 radio station vans, and 34 print reporters at the hospital. Press conferences were carried internationally. The final tests confirmed anthrax, and the woman died of the disease, the last of the 2001 deaths from the mysterious attacks. The morning after the staff meeting at Griffin, Governor Rowland went on the Today Show, praising Griffin's handling of the situation. Looking back, Pawanda notes what the consequences of not telling the staff would have been. He said, "We would have destroyed in 24 hours what it took 10 years to create, a culture built on absolute commitment to values." He added, "It wasn't a decision at all. It was a no-brainer." Gordon Binder told us several times at Amgen, a manager had planned a course of action that an employee felt contradicted the corporate values. Binder said, "I never heard of a case where such a manager didn't back down when an employee raised the contradiction with Amgen values." Notice the courage it took on both sides for the employee to confront the manager and for the manager to admit that a plan was poorly thought out and let it go. A serious commitment to values requires courage. Stories like those from Griffin and Amgen, when people follow the tribal values rather than doing what was easy, are remarkable because they are so common in companies truly dedicated to their values and so rare in companies that pretend to have values. Most of what employees told us about values is that executives publish a set of values, often derived from a consulting company, and looking remarkably like every other list of values as our values. In an act that Scott Adams has ridiculed in Dilbert, the same executives often put values on the backs of employee badges, and yet, in the minds of employees, don't follow them when faced with a tough situation. The single most important takeaway from stage 4 is that tribal leaders follow the core values of the tribe, no matter what the cost. Finding a noble cause to unite the tribe. If core values are the fuel of a tribe, a noble cause is the direction where it's headed. A noble cause captures the tribe's ultimate aspiration. Said differently, core values are what we stand for, and a noble cause is what we shoot for. NASCAR's Brian France phrases the noble cause of his company this way: everybody's gotta win. Everybody winning is tough in a business where almost every aspect of the business model is run by an independent agent, from the tracks to the teams that field the cars and drivers. France says, that's the toughest part, but everybody's gotta win. TV, the athletes, the track owners, everyone. Because NASCAR aspires to a world where everybody wins, it's been easy for them to work with everybody. People said we couldn't work with a movie studio to get things done, he said, and we threw out all the rules and got it worked out. Talladega Nights, the ballad of Ricky Bobby, was co-produced by NASCAR. That's the point of a noble cause. It sidesteps what people say can't work and finds a way for it to work. Said more technically, a noble cause leads to people aligning. Not everyone agrees with NASCAR's allocation of race dates and rules for cars, but people can align on everybody winning. Bob Tobias, from an earlier chapter, put together a single line to create alignment in the National Treasury Employees Union, and he said it was a cross between a mission and a vision. He had written an earlier document that used the words dignity and respect, and he knew that those words got to people's hearts and represented their aspirations. We asked him what the statement was. After taking a deep breath, he said, "We, the National Treasury Employees Union, NTEU, are about organizing federal employees to ensure that each federal employee is treated with dignity and respect. After he'd said it to us, he took another deep breath, as though he'd just said something important, which he had. Next to values, nothing is more important than the tribe's noble cause. He added, even though it was technically imperfect, it worked well. Again, a noble cause represents the yearnings of a tribe, and technical accuracy isn't important. Most people aligned on the vision. A noble cause is a pronouncement of a future state that a tribe will bring about through its coordinated action. It is bigger than what one person can do alone, no matter how many people are offering technical support. It requires people's best efforts and passions. It should arouse so much excitement in a tribe that even if people fail, the noble cause was worth the effort. When France and Tobias voice their tribe's noble causes, they are speaking with their tribe behind them, and the resulting confidence conveys their status as tribal leaders. The reason tribes have a noble cause is that it gives them a common vision that cuts across individual differences and makes leadership possible. It produces alignment and often the ability to work with people who seem to be enemies. People thought the NTEU could never work with an American president, but Tobias helped craft an executive order signed by Bill Clinton. People said NASCAR could never work with a movie studio, but Talladega Nights, the ballad of Ricky Bobby, was one of the box office hits of 2006. The film grossed $150 million within the first 6 weeks of its release. Additionally, several NASCAR sponsors received tens of millions of dollars in exposure value. Alignment made it possible, and alignment springs from a noble cause. From our research, there are two ways to set a noble cause. First, keep asking, in service of what? We worked with a department of business service professionals, consultants, architects, account managers, and IT experts. Each person wanted his or her profession to be the most important in the group. The consultants wanted the group to be known for consulting. The account managers wanted everyone to focus on customer service. This disagreement, a hallmark of stage three, prevented them from forming a tribal identity, a requirement of stage four. If you have a similar group, then ask people to write down their version of the noble cause, a statement that expresses their highest aspirations for the tribe. At first, we heard profession-specific words, making clients better through a combination of consulting and architecture, and serving customers with a wide array of business services. We learned from tribal leaders to keep asking, in service of what? People in the group began to see that beyond the disagreement was a common objective, serving the client. That's a step toward the noble cause, but still isn't it. Again, in service of what? People then penned lots of different versions of a higher order statement, helping customers and their stakeholders through all that we do, building a stronger economy, and building a better world. Finally, one person in the group read a statement aloud, building a better world through the power of design. Power of design cut across everything the group did. IT designed technology systems, consultants designed better organizations, account managers designed better customer satisfaction, and architects designed physical spaces. A better world shows what people worked in service of. Almost to a person, people said yes, and that's it. Here's a test of whether a noble cause is doing its job. Agreement aside, people will always want to wordsmith it. There's a feeling that the tone of it is right, that it captures why they come to work instead of moving somewhere else. In short, they align on it. The moment this group aligned on the noble cause was when they took a step into stage four. Prior to that moment, each was saying, in effect, I'm great and you're not because I'm an IT professional and my area is most in demand. Or I'm great because I design the physical space where all work happens. After they aligned, their tone shifted to, we're great because we're building a better world through the power of design. The second technique to setting a noble cause is to ask what we call the Big Four questions. As we watched tribal leaders do their work, we noted that they tended to ask, 1, what's working well? 2, what's not working? 3, what can we do to make the things that aren't working work? And 4, is there anything else? These questions capture a group's current assessment of its situation and its aspirations about what should change and why. Some people argue that the process of setting a vision or a noble cause is more important than the result, but that's not what we've observed. A stage four culture goes through the process of figuring out its highest aspirations and develops a soundbite that captures the discussion. While the tribe will benefit from any such conversations, owning stage four requires the result of the quest for the noble cause produce words upon which people align. Only with a few exceptions, stage four organizations don't print values and the noble cause on the backs of employee badges, emblazon them on company mugs, or hang them on the bulletin board next to the cafeteria menu. Instead, leaders talk about them, base decisions on them, and engage tribal members in discussions about what they mean. The advice from our research is simple. Build the noble cause into ongoing communication and don't resort to gimmickry. The oil change. Every stage four tribe we studied did regular tribal maintenance, airing grievances, ensuring alignment between activities and the touchstones of values and a noble cause, and deepening people's relationships. We came to term this process an oil change, and we recommend that tribes schedule it at least once a quarter. The oil change is a chance for tribal members to revisit what's happened, understand events from all sides, resolve issues, and remove any process, system, or habit that's inconsistent with its values and noble cause. People report that an oil change, in their words, made me fall in love with my coworkers all over again, and reminds me why I love working here. The process of an oil change is for the group to talk through three questions. 1, what's working well? 2, what's not working well? And 3, what can the team do to make the things that are not working well work? Tribes at stage 2 will voice grievances with no real desire to fix the problems. Groups at stage 3 will find that these questions lead to speech-making and attacks on others. Only when the tribe is aligned on core values and a noble cause does it have a basis to assess its behavior, find shortcomings, and restore its focus on principles. The endless quest for values and a noble cause. Identifying values and establishing a noble cause is a process, not an event. Binder's tenure at Amgen shows the cyclical nature of the investigation. When the company revisited its values after a decade, it discovered that these same values still represented the feelings and attitudes of the employees. Unlike a top-down approach, Binder's process emphasized the tribe's values, not his own. Likewise, a noble cause may shift over time and should be revisited every few years. While we were consulting at Amgen, a letter came in from a father whose son had died of cancer. One of Amgen's drugs boosted his red blood count during chemotherapy, so that his end came at home, not in the hospital. The father thanked Amgen for its work and said that because of the company's product, his young son had eaten pizza at home on the last night of his life, and that with his father, he had sipped beer for the first time. Binder hand-wrote a note of thanks to all Amgen employees, adding, "We renew life." Many who saw the note, including us, were moved by every part of what had happened. First, it is clear that Amgen is living its core value of adding value to patients. Second, Binder reacted to the note as a tribal leader does, by passing the credit to the tribe. Third, in that moment, Amgen saw itself, and a noble cause formed in people's minds. Although it is not an official tagline, "We renew life" is still repeated at the company as the reason it's a great place to work. It found a new way to phrase its noble cause as a result of a tragic death from cancer. Toward the end of our conversation with Scott Adams, the creator of Dilbert, he said, "I don't know if you have read Steve Jobs' commencement speech at Stanford that went around the internet. The comic edge in his voice was gone. I didn't get him until that. He had a weird ability to influence people, and I read that and said, this may be one of the best things I have ever read in my life. It completely changed how I felt the entire day. I thought, if you can, through your choice of words, make people feel different, and it even lasts a while, you can change everything. You can get the best out of other people." Our website, www.triballeadership.net, provides a link to the speech. While the efforts of such exceptional leaders cannot be reduced to a formula, they do share characteristics of finding shared values, aligning on a noble cause, and establishing triadic relationships, the topic of the next chapter. Without realizing it, Adams had given us one of the best descriptions of tribal leaders we've ever heard, using words to get the best out of people and to change everything. Adams added, his comic tone back, "He's ruining the whole curve." Tribal leaders tend to do just that.